You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hi, I'm Madigan, and you're listening to Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist, a podcast that explores the world through a personal feminist perspective. Hello, everyone. How are we doing at the beginning of this week? Sorry that this episode is up just a little bit later than usual. I had to record on Monday morning rather than Sunday this week. But here I am, ready to start another week, ready to start another episode. And this topic is something that I've been seeing particularly all over social media and on some reality shows, which I'll get into. It's a concept that I feel like has evolved out of a lot of other topics that have been discussed on this show before. But since this is such a prominent part of our social media culture and our culture in day-to-day life, I feel like it's really important to talk about. Today, I'm talking about the idea of a pick-me girl. And the first time I ever heard of a pick-me girl, I was way late to the game. It was literally just like a few weeks ago. And I feel like I'd kind of heard of a pick-me girl and I've heard a few people use it. But because I don't really use TikTok and my algorithm doesn't really show me that kind of stuff on Instagram, I wasn't really aware of the social media phenomenon or realized that it was really even a thing until, I don't know, like a few weeks ago. And I was watching one of the Bachelor reunion episodes. Oh, it was like the Women Tell All episode. And these two women were like, "You're a pick me. No, you're a pick me. No, you're a pick me." And I was like, "What is this?" I kind of got what it meant because I can like put the cues together. But at the same time, I was like, "What does that mean? What are they going at?" And so I started looking it up and I was like, "Oh, okay. It's kind of like the girl that does anything for attention." According to Urban Dictionary, the most reputable and reliable source for definitions of words and phrases, obviously. A pick-me girl is a girl who seeks male validation by indirectly or directly insinuating that she is not like other girls. After saying girl so many times in that last paragraph, I have a real problem with this phrase to begin with because, I don't know, it really rubs me the wrong way when men or other women refer to adult women as girls. And I know this is happening a lot with teens right now. So young teen girls calling each other girls clearly is fine. But when I'm seeing older women getting pulled into it and being called girls, that in and of itself, I just think it's such a belittling thing to do. And it's so fucking rude. I correct people all the time whenever they refer to women as girls. I'm that person. Some characteristics of a pick-me girl include letting men walk all over them because they're just so carefree and they only hang out with men because men, to them, are unproblematic. This is not a new concept, and Keegan and I talked about the manic pixie dream girl trope, and we talked about the idea of being basic as well, I think probably toward the beginning of the show. And there is this idea of the cool girl trope as well, where it's like, oh no, I don't deal with the drama with women. I would rather just hang out with men because they don't get petty and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And it's interesting because I feel like in a lot of ways, that was so part of the culture of my childhood growing up. And I feel like a lot of that came from movies and books and television in like what was considered a cool girl or girls that guys wanted to date. And when you're a teenager and you're insecure about your identity, it makes total sense to me that you're going to want to endear yourself to the men around you if you're a straight woman by acting a certain way. And honestly, I think queer women would do the same. I'm going to talk about this a lot throughout the episode, but there's also the idea that girls are also raised to believe that anything feminine is inferior, weak, dumb, so on and so forth. And we're taught that the more superior things, the more superior interests are the more quote unquote historically masculine interests and things. So it makes sense that a woman would be like, well, I don't want to be seen as weak or inferior, so I'm going to do the things that will make me look the opposite. There's lots of things that we do in order to make ourselves more attractive or more accepted to other people. But it is really, really unnerving when I hear women talking about how they like to hang out with men because they're less drama. I just think men and women really have different ways of displaying their drama. Because, like, we've all seen Mean Girls. We know that women can be, like, very undercutting and conniving. We're a little bit quieter about our revenge, I guess, or whatever you'd want to call it, our competitiveness, which I'm going to get into throughout this episode. But men display it in an equally toxic way because men, one, by not sharing their emotions, by not communicating that way, they're actually just bottling everything up. And it usually turns into more of a physical manifestation of their anger because that's what society has told them is appropriate for them to do. And also, if you like really get to know pretty much any man, their life is full of plenty of drama, trust me. I looked up some examples of what constitutes a pick-me girl, and this is what I found. She makes it known that she doesn't need to wear makeup. She talks about how low maintenance she is. She shames other women. She brags about being a guy's girl, and she makes it known that she doesn't do drama. I think that innately some of this is not necessarily wrong, but it's the way that you go about saying some of these things, I think, that can make it more complicated. Because I don't like to wear makeup, and I think, honestly, for me, it's because I was made fun of for not wearing makeup for so long that now it's kind of like a fuck you in a lot of ways. And I genuinely just like to be able to see my face, and I hate the way that foundation feels on my face. So I do talk about the fact that I don't wear makeup, but I fucking love that other people know how to do their makeup really well, and I wish that I could do that, especially when I have to go somewhere and look nice, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing except for like how to do a full face of like figure skating makeup, and I don't want to put that on as a 31, almost 32 year old woman. I'm not doing it. There are also some really great examples from movies, and here are some that I found online. Bella Swan from Twilight, Elaine from Seinfeld.
I don't have one female friend left.
No, of course you don't. You're a man's woman. You hate other women and they hate you?
A lot of shit from the movie Miss Congeniality. And my favorite pick-me girl of all time, Kat from 10 Things I Hate About You. Here's what I think would be considered a very pick-me girl poem that she reads at the end of the film.
I hate the way you talk to me and the way you cut your hair. I hate the way you drive my car. I hate it when you stare. I hate your big dumb combat boots and the way you read my mind. I hate you so much it makes me sick. It even makes me rhyme. I hate it. I hate the way you're always right. I hate it when you lie. I hate it when you make me laugh. Even worse when you make me cry. I hate it when you're not around and the fact that you didn't call. But mostly I hate the way I don't hate you. Not even close. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
When I was thinking of some examples of a pick-me girl in media while I was writing this episode, there were two songs that popped into my head right away. One of them was from my childhood, one of my favorite songs. I like literally cried when I got this CD for Christmas the year it came out, is Avril Lavigne's song, Skater Boy.
He was a boy, she was a girl.
The song, for those of you who don't know this absolute classic, is about this ballerina girl and this skater boy, obviously, who fall in love with each other, but the ballerina feels like she's too good for the boy because he's just this like wannabe rock star skateboarder guy. So she dumps him, and then the guy eventually finds Avril Lavigne and they fall in love, and she's into all of the same things he is, and they're writing music together and all this kind of stuff. And the ballerina is sitting at home with her kids, watching them on TV, so jealous. And I feel like Avril Lavigne really was kind of like an early version of a cool girl for me in a lot of ways when I was younger, because this was a time of like the Lindsay Lohans, the Hilary Duffs, Paris Hilton, very, very like hyper, quote unquote, girly, very, very feminine, pink, sparkly, bubbly. That was kind of the vibe for most popular famous celebrities at the time. And then Avril Lavigne came along and she was wearing, you know, like a white tank top and a tie around her neck and some baggy jeans. And she had this very like rugged, cool aesthetic to her. And then suddenly all of these other girls kind of followed suit. I was somewhere in between. I loved my more feminine things and I definitely had a bit of like quote unquote girliness, I guess. I need to find a better word to describe it. So I'm sorry that I keep using that, but I'm using air quotes with my fingers. You just can't see every time I'm saying girly. But then I was also into a lot of things that didn't connect to that as well. And I responded really well to Avril Lavigne and her kind of like angry, tough, black sheep kind of vibe because I felt that way a lot. Like I didn't feel like I really fit into the Abercrombie Hollister aesthetic, even though that's what I was buying into and what I was making myself into. And, you know, as a kid, obviously, we try on different personalities and identities and figure out what suits us best. And then for the kids who are a little bit younger than me, but again, this is a song that made me think of a pick me girl. You Belong With Me by Taylor Swift. She wears short skirts, I wear t-shirts, she's cheer captain, and I'm on the bleachers. And the whole song is basically about how this boy that Taylor Swift is in love with should be with her instead of the girl that he's with because she's so high maintenance and overly feminine, and Taylor is more down to earth and kind of nerdy and cool, but like really knows him and cares about him. And I think that both of these could be really good examples of like some early pick me girl kind of messaging that we were receiving when we were younger. So the term pick me first kind of showed up on Twitter in 2016 with the hashtag twee like a pick me. What does twee mean? I don't know any new slang, but this is from 2016. What is happening? And this hashtag was used to mock women who fall under the guy's girl category, especially those who consider themselves to be quote unquote wifey material. Again, I feel like I'm reading a foreign language with this sometimes. But then in 2022, hashtag pick me girl reached 2.2 billion views on TikTok, often featuring the monologue performed by Ellen Pompeo on Grey's Anatomy.
Okay, here it is. Your choice, it's simple. Her or me. And I'm sure she's really great. But Derek, I love you. In a really, really big, pretend to like your taste in music. Let you eat the last piece of cheesecake. Hold a radio over my head outside your window. Unfortunate way that makes me hate you. Love you. So pick me. Choose me. Love me.
fun fact, I was picking up one of my kiddos from school. Definitely not telling you which one with this story, but I was like, I kind of had my head down and I was focusing on crossing the street or whatever. And when I went to open the gate to the schoolyard to pick them up, I look up and there's Ellen Pompeo in front of me with her kids. And I was like, oh my God, and just kind of, you know, passed each other and smiled really quick. But it was so funny. I was like, oh God, wasn't expecting to see that when I put my head up. Anyway, Ellen Pompeo was asked about this monologue written by series creator Shonda Rhimes in an interview in 2023, where she confessed that the scene actually horrified her to the point where she didn't want to shoot it at all. She said, "When I read that scene, I was horrified. I'm going to beg a man, and then on top of it, Meredith sobbing. I don't know if it was in the script or not, or if our set producers wanted me to cry when I was doing that scene. But I'm bawling not for the reasons in the scene. I'm bawling because I can't believe I'm on TV begging a man to love me." Ouch. Yeah, that would be rough. When Pompeo's daughter came across the scene on TikTok, the mother and daughter had a little chat. And Ellen explained that she didn't write the script and didn't want to do it, but that was part of the job. In another interview, she told former Grey's castmate Katherine Heigl, "My daughter and her friends, they sit around and they're like, oh, she's a pick me girl. I'm like, what's a pick me girl? They were like, you know, girls who are like, pick me, choose me. And I'm like, hello, do you know who invented the pick me girl? Oh, that sucks. I'm sure she doesn't want that legacy. I'm not a fan of Grey's Anatomy anymore. I watched it for the first 4 seasons, and then I lost interest once too many of the original characters were booted off. But fun fact, I don't know if we talked about it when she was in an episode with me years ago, but for any Grey's fans out there, Max's sister Haley is in season 2, episode 1. And if you can recall, it's the episode where Addison first shows up to the hospital and she's dealing with these 3 little girls and one of them threw a baby in the trash. Yeah, it was Haley that threw the baby in the trash in that episode. It's pretty hilarious and it was always pretty fun to make fun of her for that. She now has a real baby of her own, but thankfully I don't think that she'll have the same ending as she did when she was like 12 years old on Grey's Anatomy. While the phrase pick me girl may be relatively new to the culture, the idea of a woman endearing themselves to men by appearing like one of the guys or not like other girls is not a new phenomenon. There's a whole trope of it in every kind of media and art form, whether it be film, on TV, in novels, it's everywhere. And it's influenced how women view themselves, their fellow woman, and romantic relationships. The pick me girl, the cool girl, and the basic girl all intersect, as they are all labels that we created for women to feel superior to one another. But why do we do it? Like with any other kind of psychological phenomenon, there is an argument of nature versus nurture. Since the dawn of our evolution as human beings, research tells us that women have been compelled to level the playing field by any means necessary in order to have access to the best genetic material possible. Obviously, this was in a time where literally everything was a fight for your life. People didn't live very long. Times were very dangerous. And goddammit, you wanted to keep populating the earth. So you literally did whatever you could to attract a mate and get knocked up. And it wasn't just that. You wanted the best genetic material possible because that would give your future offspring the best chance at success. You all paid attention in science class. I don't need to tell you all this. But to me and many feminist psychologists, which I am not, but I do agree with them, this idea was created by man and perpetuated by women as a way for the patriarchy to enforce internalized misogyny. It's interesting because last week I posted a series of memes, which I've been doing on Instagram lately because y'all seem to fucking love the internet memes that I enjoy as well. And one of them said something like, "The most important part of burning down the patriarchy is not using other women as kindling." And there were a lot of people in the comment section that were saying, yeah, except for the misandrists and the TERFs and the yada, 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 yada. And I'm like, well, that's not what I'm talking about, though. Like, clearly those people are not the ones that you should be bringing up. The point of that post is that we should all be inclusive of every woman. And I think that that would actually combat a lot of the misandry that's out there. It is not going to combat the TERFs, unfortunately, but it really is this internalized misogyny that is the problem. But the reason for it is that that man-made societal structure that has put men above women. Feminist psychology argues that competition amongst women is driven not by the biological urges to mate, but rather by social mechanism. The argument is that women, born and raised in a male-dominated society, internalize that male perspective, or the male gaze, and adopt it as their own. This could also be why a lot of women feel like they need to start taking on more masculine interests or characteristics in order to appeal to both men and women, just people around them, because things that are deemed feminine are deemed lesser than, or weaker, or sillier. And it's just always been that way. So if you show that you have some interests that are on the more quote-unquote masculine side, you're going to be taken more seriously in all different aspects of your life. And to become even more successful with those people around you who also have the same thought process, you do tend to buy into that male gaze and perpetuate it as well, because you want to keep those other people, those other women, down because you're receiving the success that you need. And I think that especially in a time where there weren't as many women in the workforce and women were receiving even less opportunities than we still have now in a lot of different industries and careers, there is competition built in because there were so few positions available. And there are so many competitive industries out there where, in a way, I think it's healthy, but I don't think that gendered competition is ever going to be anything that's going to help womankind as a whole. But here's an example from my life. I was in acting school from when I was 18 until like 23, off and on. And being that we would always be auditioning for other short films or, you know, different scenes in classes, or, you know, you really want all of the teachers to think that you're one of the best. You want the directing students you're working with to think that you're one of the best. And especially whenever you see someone who you're like, oh, they would kind of go out for the same role as me, there is a little sense of competitiveness in there because you want it just as badly as they do. And especially if you look similarly to another woman, I mean, that's hard because you know that you're going to be pitted directly against that person, and it makes it really, really difficult. But I think that growing up in skating really helped me have a healthy attitude around competition and around my competitiveness with other people, because I'm an incredibly competitive person. I remember when I would be skating growing up, especially if my best friend Ivory were on the ice with me, I would just like train extra hard that day and work really hard and kind of show off a little bit, because though she was one of my best friends, she was also my biggest competitor, and I wanted to be the best. And it had nothing to do with Ivory or not wanting her to succeed, but it was just more about me wanting to be the best and being a spoiled little brat, probably. I don't know. But I was always really good friends with all of my stiffest competition, and I would always go out of my way to make friends with them because you would see each other all the time. And it made everything just so much more enjoyable. I didn't like the people who were like obvious show-offs and would get off the ice and be like, yes, oh my God, I did so good. I'd be like, that's so rude. Don't psych people out. But that's where I think that, you know, having a healthy level of competition and wanting to make yourself be the best is great. But there's this phrase that I really love that says, comparison is the thief of joy. And I think that that's also very true, because when we're comparing ourselves to other people and other women in particular, we're not giving ourselves the credit that we deserve being our own authentic selves that we are.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
But since we're talking about pick-me girls, and a lot of this has to do with male attention in particular, according to Noam Spencer, PhD, as women come to consider being prized by men as their ultimate source of strength, worth, achievement, and identity, they are compelled to battle women for the prize. I feel like this would make sense for women before the second wave of feminism, because when women literally did not have any rights of their own to own property, to get a divorce, to be able to work at any kind of job they wanted, they had to rely fully on their husbands for all things financial. So men, in a lot of ways, made themselves be that ultimate source of strength, worth, and achievement and identity in women because we weren't allowing them enough rights to be able to go out and become fully actualized human beings. And then adding to that is Karl Marx's idea of false consciousness, which is a state of mind that prevents a person from recognizing the injustice of their current situation and blaming it on those around you instead, basically. Many women refuse to see that the real threat is not other women, but the male establishment that controls their lives. So instead of going after the structure or institution that has created competition between women, we unfairly take it out on each other. This may seem kind of out of context, but go with me here. I just finished watching that Netflix docuseries, Unlocked. The series takes place at a jail in Arkansas in a particular unit which runs on a 23-to-1 schedule, which means 23 hours in lockdown, 1 hour out each day. And the sheriff of this jail really wanted to reform his jail and wanted to do this experiment with a kind of prison system that we aren't used to in the States by unlocking the doors and removing the deputies from the unit and letting the inmates themselves create their own community in hopes of building responsibility and rehabilitation before they go out into the world. Throughout the 8 episodes, I saw the inmates going after each other again and again, every time something didn't go their way. And in the last episode, one of the inmates said something about how they shouldn't be taking their hurt out on each other when it's the institutionalization that is to blame at the heart of everything. And that comparison, you know, doing research this week jumped into my head that it seems like much in jail, women throughout history have turned on each other to improve their own image instead of trying to beat down the institution that made it that way. I also read a really great opinion piece in the New York Times where the writer Emily V. Gordon wrote about her group of girlfriends growing up, which she called the Sensational Six. As they grew out of their childhood games and hit puberty, the Sensational Six began to change as they were all, quote, suddenly aware of a new dimension. When Emily was in high school, she decided that all of her female friends were stupid and traded them in for guy friends. She had a lot of the same interests as these guys. She was into heavy metal music and horror movies, interests that made her become a quote-unquote guy's girl. Emily wrote in the piece, "I thought that by segregating myself, I would save myself from the awareness that I wasn't ever going to be pretty, perfect, or cool enough. And occasionally, I would get to make out with a male pal because hormones were running rampant." This I totally understand. I feel like a lot of women have gone through this phase in their lives, especially because cis women, trans women, all women, we are not one-dimensional. Just because we like pink does not mean that we can't also like football. Just because we like glitter doesn't mean we also can't like heavy metal music. I am such a dichotomous person. You don't know when I'm walking down the street if I'm listening to a murder podcast, musical theater, some old school country, or Judy Garland. Like, I'm all over the fucking map. Sometimes I like to wear dresses and be super bright and frilly, but a lot of times I'd rather just stick to jeans and t-shirts and not wear a lot of makeup or put a lot of thought into what I'm wearing. We all contain multitudes. We are not simply one sort of archetype of person because we identify as female. Back to Emily's story. Instead of hating women, though, Emily began to pity women. Oh, have any of you been there? Because I definitely feel like I have. Women who work too hard to be conventionally attractive. Women who were, quote unquote, too girly, like I've been saying. Feeling sorry that they must need attention so badly. I don't think I was ever that judgmental necessarily, but when Emily was talking about pity rather than hatred, that really resonated with me because there were definitely, especially when it came to competition with like one man in particular, I definitely felt some hatred for this person. But then at a lot of other times I would feel kind of like pity because it's like, oh, they think they have to try so hard. I already kind of have this guy, whatever. Long story, I'm not getting into it now. But I think when you're young, it's really easy to want to put someone down because they're different than you, because you want to make yourself feel like you've made yourself into the best possible person ever. So the person who's doing something differently obviously doesn't have their shit together and they're wrong and they're not cool. According to clinical psychologist Regine Galanti, one of the main challenges of adolescence is figuring out who you are. It's literally an identity crisis. And to find out who you are, you have to try on different identities. And instead of accepting our fellow girl and woman while they're going through this transformation, we love to point out their differences and make fun of them instead. According to Galanti, it's normal to change yourself up a little to impress people at this time to fit in. But if you're too obvious about it, then you're a pick-me girl. In her 20s, Emily met two girls in her social group in New York. Women who owned every room they entered. We all know women like this, don't we? She immediately hated them, but she also couldn't keep her eyes off of them. In my mind at this point, I'm like, oh, she's bi. She's definitely bi. She doesn't come out at any point in this article, but I'm like, oh, I've been there. Once Emily was in the bar bathroom with them, and one of them complimented her coat. The other started talking about the guy she was with, saying that he was acting funny. And Emily began to see that her negative view of them had nothing to do with them at all. It was just her warped perception of them. Also, it's really easy to be intimidated by cool people. I'm intimidated by cool people all the time. Emily brings up the nature and nurture debate on this subject in her article, and she proposed a third theory as well, saying that female identifying people are ultimately competing with themselves. She wrote, "For many of us, we look at other women and see, instead, a version of ourselves that is better, prettier, smarter, and something more. We don't see the other woman at all." This also attests to my theory that no one cares about what you're doing as much as you think they care about it. We are far more worried about what others think of us than others actually spend time thinking about and judging us, in my opinion. And the people who are wasting their time judging and thinking about things like that need to get a life, honestly. And I have a theory of my own. We all look at ourselves every single day, multiple times a day. And now with social media and camera phones and so on, we see our own faces and bodies reflected back at us constantly. When we see the same thing over and over and over again, we tend to get bored of it. We've had so much opportunity to sit and scrutinize ourselves and find differences in ourselves from one another that we have somehow become to believe that we are not spectacular beings, which we are. Think of it this way. Sally aspires to be like Jessica, who aspires to be like Morgan, who aspires to be like Hannah, who aspires to be like Sally. I feel like there's things that we admire in the women around us and want to emulate. And I think that that can be a really healthy, wonderful thing and a way for us to discover more about ourselves. But it's also not healthy to be able to look at that and put yourself down negatively because of what that person has or what that person looks like. Because chances are they're just as sick of looking at their own reflection as you are looking at your reflection. I like to think that maybe if we all tried to view ourselves with the eyes of our friends, we would begin to see a much more positive reflection of our appearance. I also highly recommend for anyone who's not just struggling with body dysmorphia or things like that, but who's also just really struggling with their own self-image, it doesn't hurt to go without a mirror for a while. I don't think that you should avoid your appearance because there's mirrors and cameras and stuff everywhere, but also don't give yourself the opportunity to just sit and stare at yourself in front of the mirror and start scrutinizing yourself because it does nothing. When I left treatment, I had a really big full-length mirror, and I was supposed to get rid of all my mirrors when I left. So what I did is I just turned it around, and I made a really pretty painting on the back and just like worked on it randomly whenever I had time. And that became a much more beautiful thing for me to look at than have to sit and stare at my reflection all the time. So, little tip. I think within this topic, there's also the issue of gender. A lot of videos I've seen regarding pick-me's focus on the pick-me saying they're into traditionally masculine things, like a woman ordering a black coffee and the male barista saying, "Oh my God, marry me." Or when the girl in the relationship knows more about a sport than the guy does and it seems super impressive. But here's the thing, black coffee and sports are not gatekept by men. It's society's doing that everything has been so gendered, from colors to careers to hobbies to sports to food and beverages. And it's insane. It's just silly. Thankfully, gender being a construct is becoming more and more understood by society. And as we continue to work to break down the confines of gender, we're able to explore these differences and become more unique and dynamic people. By accepting both what we truly like and who we truly are, and accepting what others like and who they truly are without judgment. By linking gender to a person's interests and personality, we would only be perpetuating harmful gender norms. And judging a person for what they like, no matter what it is just really lame behavior. This is how the Pick Me Girl started out, but the term seems to be continually evolving. Now it seems like the term can be used for any girl or woman who does literally anything that seems attention-seeking. I tried to go through and watch a bunch of those TikTok videos under the Pick Me hashtag, and honestly, I couldn't even follow them. It just didn't even make any sense. But from what I got, it seems to me like in most of these videos, the women and girls are making fun of other women and girls who get excited about things or who are insecure. And that's just lame. Don't yuck someone's yum. Why do the people making these videos even care so much? Why are we spending so much of our time pointing out each other's perceived flaws? Honestly, it just made me have a very low opinion of the creator of those videos, not the so-called Pick Me Girls. Because yeah, what the Pick Me Girls are doing and saying can definitely be putting down other women to try to make themselves look better, feel better, whatever. But that's their problem. That's not yours. We shouldn't be picking a fight with the Pick Me Girls. To me, it just seems like they might be a little bit insecure and are just trying to find themselves. So I think that we can fight this phenomenon with one simple solution, the power of friendship. I know it's cheesy, but it's true. We as humans need community. Also, when I say community, I'm talking about the circle of support you have around you, not necessarily a literal group or community that you have to join. It's not even just humans. Studies have shown that mammals, from tiny little rodents all the way to us human beings, that we are profoundly shaped by our social environment, and that we suffer greatly when our social bonds are threatened or severed. We all remember how awful 2020 was, right? Not only has there always been power in numbers, experiencing a sense of belonging is vital for our psychological well-being. And being a part of a healthy community helps us feel connected to others and feel that we're a part of something larger than ourselves. A community provides belonging, support, safety, and identity in finding common ground. American essayist Anais Nin once wrote, each friend represents a world in us, a world possibly not born until they arrive, and it is only by meeting that a new world is born. I think what she's talking about is the profound effect that friendships have on our own individual identities. I'm sure many of you listening can agree with me here. When I say that I feel like my personality, my likes and dislikes, in many ways are an amalgamation of all of the closest relationships I've had throughout my life. In female-female friendships, women find comfort, validation, empowerment, and have educative experiences with one another. We should be opening the door to learn more about each other instead of driving a further wedge between us. We're stronger when we're together. I mean, for Christ's sake, look at the feminist movement. The concepts of being both a pick-me girl and the cool girl are incredibly damaging in the long run. And both kinds of women deserve empathy, not scrutiny. The pick-me girl points to the divide and disrespect that women and girls have for each other. It criticizes women for criticizing women, creating a cycle of misogyny that we as women are perpetuating when we use this phrase. Young people must not be taught to pit themselves against one another and instead enforce positive bonds and friendships. I'm sure this will not be the last time women will find a way to pit themselves against each other. I can only hope that with each iteration of the pick me girl, we can all learn to become a little more understanding and a lot more supportive of our fellow woman, no matter what she likes. At the end of the day, just don't yuck someone's yum. All right, everyone, that is all I have for you today. Thank you so much for listening to another episode. If you have any episode suggestions, I would absolutely love to hear from you. So please email me at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or shoot me a DM on Instagram @angryneighborhoodfeminist. And be sure to follow me over there. If you like the show and you think others would too, feel free to share an episode with a friend. And don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts with a quick sentence about why you enjoy the show. All right, everyone, that's all I have for you today. I'll see you on Friday. With all that being said, I encourage you to rage on. Bye.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side passage?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.